Hey everybody, Matt Michaels and Sin City Steve here on the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. We're pretty sure Rob Bossolari is dressed in drag again tonight, but not as Donald Trump. I'm almost positive that's what's going on with him. And I believe DJ is being held at the border for attempting to smuggle in 50,000 pairs of fuzzy white slippers.
It's all my fault, too, because I asked him if he'd bring me back some. So I feel partially responsible, and I'm the dick.
Yeah, well.
Yeah,
we hope he makes it back to the States soon. And hopefully, you know, the fuzzy slippers. I mean, Canadian fuzzy slippers are no joke.
Exactly, dude. That's why I was like, hey, man, I need your help. Hook me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of needing help, Steve, help me understand why I should have given a fuck about AEW's 90-hour pay-per-view with no setup and a bunch of guys from, I don't know. I know Jeff Cobb. He lives here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I love how you didn't even stipulate or, you know, qualify which 90-hour pay-per-view it was, because seemingly all of them are that way. So, you know, you could just copy and paste that across. So it's all good.
You know, it is kind of weird though. That's the one thing, like, we know, okay, when WrestleMania was going 6 to 8 hours, that's when they're like, all right, let's fucking split it. We can make more money, blah, blah, blah. You know, fans were like, oh good, at least we don't have to sit there for fucking 9 hours. Now, yeah. And that's WrestleMania. That's your arc.
Right.
So what's very interesting about what he does is he has some storytelling building up to some of the pay-per-view matches.
They've gotten better. They've gotten better.
A little better, sure. Yeah. But on the long run, it was, I think the pay-per-view was starting 5 o'clock our time, and I think it was somewhere around 3:30 the first match started. With the pre-shows. So
yeah. Yeah. That's an hour and a half of pre-show shit.
Wow.
Now, mind you, that was 5 matches, one of which was a straight up squash match. The other matches on the pre-show were pretty fucking decent, actually. Especially that trios match with Lucha Bros and Mystico versus Los Ingobernables de Japón. But again, you hit the nail right on the head. Very little build in the traditional sense. I think that with these Forbidden Door shows, we always rip into AEW for, you know, the storytelling and things of that nature. Dare I say, there was more storytelling and more build to these matches than in previous Forbidden Door years, especially if you look at the Mina Shirakawa and Tony Storm match. Involving Mariah May, actually drawing that into a storyline and seeing the payoff, even if you want to call it that, with the the triple kiss at the end there that everybody, including Nigel McGuinness, popped for and gave a standing ovation to. But yeah, I mean, realistically, I see what they're doing. I want more storytelling, and it's no coincidence that the one match on the show leading into this show that drew the best as far as its quarter hours, and everybody has gotten so hung up on Dynamite viewership and the quarters and all this stuff. The thing that actually did the best for them in terms of TV viewer retention and numbers overall was that Tony Storm, Mina Shirakawa, and Mariah May triangle. And it's because they actually brought in some emotional investment on behalf of the audience and made people give a shit about the characters involved. That's a strange concept, right?
But
pro wrestling 101.
Right. But let's go to the fact that if you take out the lesbian angle, all right, now if the angle was, you know, something about the past or something about someone sleeping with someone's boyfriend or, you know, some other soap opera-y thing, how is the retention then? You know, so it's a combination. It's not only putting a story, but it's a pop story. It's a Mark story, right?
Now, they did paint the picture though that, and they showed vignettes and video packages detailing Mariah's history with Mina. And obviously, if you've watched any AEW TV, you know that the Mariah and Tony situation and how that's been. So I think that they actually have done a good job with that one specifically, but they've gone out of their way to air video packages. And yeah, obviously what's going to get the headlines from everything, of course, the lesbian storyline, but they did do a good bit of storytelling with Mariah's past versus her present. And where does that leave her for her future?
And that's not arguable, right? That's fine. That is something that needs to be done, and I agree. But what I'm saying is, again, quick retention is if I'm watching TV and I see that these chicks might end up having sexual attention, knowing that the 500 some odd thousand regular AEW viewers, probably 450,000 of them are guys between the ages of 18 and 49. Pretty much. Yeah, they're probably going to stick on that one for a while. Literally stick on that one.
Of course. Just them laying the groundwork with other things that they did this week on TV. I think that they're starting to put pieces into motion, and it's almost as if they're starting to 5 years in, finally understand that people have to have an emotional attachment to characters if they're going to actually retain viewers. And it shouldn't have taken 5 years to get to this point, but I'm very happy that evidently the worst viewership, you know, had that light bulb moment go off in, you know, Tony's head that, hey, I need to change something up. Because I've already picked up on the differences just from this past week of TV.
Which is interesting, since, you know, I found
stuttering John all day.
Yeah. If you think about what I had a hard time processing this week and what they're doing though, at the same time is MJF and then him and, whatever.
Daniel Garcia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so obviously what I could genuinely see happening is I think MJF is going to cost Will Ospreay that international title on Wednesday versus Daniel Garcia. And that's going to lead to an MJF versus Will Ospreay match at All In Wembley. At least so I'm hoping, because I mean, all of the signs are there. Realistically, that's what you do. Either the Don Callis family or MJF or both cost Ospreay the match. Then you can spiral him away to working with either MJF or the Don Callis family. Hopefully not though. We'll see where they choose to go, but yeah, I see at least them trying things. Let's just see them through and actually not start, stop on some of the storyline shit.
But what's interesting is, so then what do you do with Swerve?
Well, obviously he's got the winner of the Owen Hart tournament in the main event of Wembley, which your wild card we're going to see who it is on Wednesday. A lot of people think it's Ospreay. I think it's going to be Hangman Page. And I think Hangman Page actually wins that tournament. And we get Hangman versus Swerve running it back because they had a great series of matches last year. And honestly, I could see them running it back at Wembley, Hangman Page versus Swerve one more time.
So you can make Will Ospreay the biggest baby face in your company right now by having him win the title in front of that England crowd.
Yeah.
But we're going to go and put him with MJF, keep him a heel maybe, or make MJF a heel, and then have Hangman fucking Page, who's been out and probably is coming back like the deadest fart in the dead of night, to wrestle Swerve again. And it has to be an even more ridiculous bloodfest, because that guy cannot fucking hold shit without, I mean, he can't. He is one of the fucking worst wrestlers. He's so fucking boring. The vignette they did for him on fucking Collision, it was just like, why am I excited for this guy? He hasn't proved anything other than he's friends with the Bucks and Kenny. That's about it. That's why he's where he's at. If not, he'd be... Lance Hoyt is 50 times more talented than fucking Hangman Page. And they could essentially be the same character if you wanted. All right? Two fucking cowboys. I take Lance Hoyt over Hangman Page.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I see your point for sure.
I just don't see why you would take Ospreay, have him go against MJF now without having... Now, if you have him cost... Okay, MJF cost the match now. Why didn't MJF have him cost the fucking match against Swerve?
So I think that what they did was very smart, in that you could have had a fuck finish with the Don Callis family laying him out and it being a tainted victory for Swerve. But I think that it was very, very important for them to get a major... solidifying win for Swerve. Everybody was worried that Swerve was going to drop the title to Ospreay at the show, which would have been an absolute mistake. I said it right from the jump. But I like the fact that realistically you had the Don Callis kind of altercation with Ospreay, where he handed him the screwdriver and stuff like that. But then nothing else happened. Realistically, there weren't any other outside factors in the match. So that doesn't cheapen Swerve's victory at all. And quite frankly, that was the best match that I've seen Swerve Strickland wrestle in years, if not ever. I don't think he ever had a better match as part of, you know, any of the WWE brands. The only other thing, obviously, that people go back to is his match in Lucha Underground against A.R. Fox. But I think even this match outweighed that match as far as quality. And Swerve came across as a star. Legitimately, say what you will about AEW. We've talked a lot of things in the past. But Swerve had a star-making performance at Forbidden Door. And just take a look at the internet. It's almost the consensus among, you know, the people that don't automatically shit on a product just because it's AEW.
Right. But there's also no doubt that Swerve has been building this whole thing. You know what I'm saying?
Without question. Yeah. Without question.
So there's no doubt. And again, this is kind of the corner you back yourself into, right? So you're trying to build Ospreay. You're trying to build Swerve. You're trying to build MJF. Those are, you know, legitimate cornerstones, unlike fucking Jack Perry and fucking Darby Allin. Like, those guys are not.
Well, I mean, Jack Perry's your new TNT champion. You mean he's not a cornerstone of your company? Darby Allin is a multi-time TNT champion.
Right. So is Wardlow. Look at how he's still getting fucked. God, his ass gotta hurt, man. That poor guy.
At this point, is that TNT title more of a curse than anything? I mean, well, realistically, if you look at it and you look at all the shit that's happened.
Edge was TNT champion, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So he broke his leg.
Right. And you look back through the years, it's been an albatross.
Didn't that belt kill someone? Didn't Brody have that belt? Yeah. Yeah, you're fucking right. That belt is literally a fucking...
It's an albatross, man. If you look at it, look at the people that have held that championship. They've not been the same. Wardlow, Sammy Guevara, the list goes on and on. It's just been a cursed championship. And
it's given Sammy a couple of kids.
Thank God for that.
Christian's the only one who's really not suffered by that title. So
he's the only one that didn't get the the curse of the TNT title. I guess it's like the old school Madden curse. It's now the TNT title curse. So
yeah. Well, yeah. If Jack joins his dad and hey, if Christian can say it, why can't I? All right.
Hey, the views expressed on the Vegas Bad Boys podcast do not reflect anyone except the individual that speaks them into existence, aka you.
Rob Barsis. Yeah, Rob Busser.
Rob Butchess.
Rob Busser.
Rubber Baby Belgium.
The guy who does Trump. That guy. It's all his views and opinion. Him.
Exactly. He's the head writer of the show.
Right. So other than, that being the main event and the women's match, was there anything else that when I got friends texting me going, boy, I had a nice long nap.
Well, dude, I know the friends you have. So, I mean, most of their opinions are just, taken with a grain of salt anyway. But nonetheless.
And a shot of tequila with that salt. So,
Of course. So stop me if you heard this one before, but Bryan Danielson put on an absolute banger of a match and told a hell of a story in his match with Shingo Takagi.
And then he cried at the end of the match because every match is going to be his last now, apparently.
Well, every match, there's an injury scare angle too.
Right.
That's the only thing that bugs the shit out of me with this Bryan Danielson retirement tour is seemingly there's one storyline that they go to in every match of his. And that is, oh shit, what is he breaking or injuring tonight? I wish that they didn't go this route in every single fucking high profile match with Bryan, but nonetheless they are. So, if we were sticking to the format, that would definitely have gotten a what the fuck from me this week. But the match between the two dragons, between the American Dragon and the Rampage Dragon, dude, if this would have been on any other show, this match would have been the match of the night. But that's just how good that Swerve and Ospreay match was. Danielson Takagi went out there. They had a 20-minute match in the Owen Hart tournament. And to absolutely no one's surprise, Danielson advances. But Shingo he showed again why he is one of the best wrestlers in the world. And regardless of the style that you want to work, he'll bring it. He will bring it.
It's interesting during the last pay-per-view, the Double or Nothing, when Brian got powerbombed or whatever the fuck the Bucks did to him. They just killed him. I screamed right at Papa Buck. Thanks for letting your boys kill the fucking guy. It was just because
awesome.
Everything he's doing now, it just looks like he's fucking dying.
Wait until you see his match at All In against Nigel McGuinness. And yes, I did not stutter nor speak incorrectly. I think that's the direction they're going to go.
Probably.
If they're ever going to do Nigel versus Brian, it has to be this year at Wembley. And that Owen Hart tournament, I'm telling you, they've said that there's no one allowed at ringside during those matches. But what about somebody that's doing commentary?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be something if Nigel McGuinness cost Bryan Danielson the fucking finals of the Owen Hart tournament?
Yeah, I guess it would be something. I'm not, again, it's one of those things where How invested am I in Nigel McGuinness?
Exactly. That's that. So that's the only kind of stumbling block that I have. Obviously, right. You know, if they're placating the sickos and the hardcores, which is what we know that Tony books for, that's one thing. But right. Your casual audience, oh, well, this guy's fighting a commentator. What the fuck? So a commentator we've never
seen wrestle, right?
They're going to need to do plenty of video packages on every single show, yeah. Not just on the go home show to make you care. You got to start building this fucking shit immediately if you want people to give a shit and for your segments to retain your audience.
Right. Did you ever feel like MJF was going to lose that match? Because the one thing that I think that they really fucked up on was they put more emphasis on this Ospreay and Garcia shit. And here it is. And you kind of get on Collision. Oh, watch out. This guy, he just makes shit up as he goes along. And he's just like deadly. And he's got a mask on. He's a lucha. Watch out, MJF. You're going to be... Oh, it might be difficult. And it's like, is anyone sitting going, yeah, MJF's in fucking trouble. He's losing that match.
Not in the slightest. Obviously, we now know the main reason why MJF versus Hechicero was on the show. Obviously, the show was on Long Island at the UBS right. Arena. So, of course, why not have MJF kick off the show and, you know, get the crowd started hot? Incidentally, that was the shortest match on the main show. Sure. The Mariah May and Saraya match, and then also the four-way tag match on the pre-show were the only thing shorter the entire night. So, of course, to answer your original question, Hechicero, there was not a thought in my mind for even a split second that this guy was going to win that match. So I think, you know, getting that suspension of disbelief makes all the difference in the world. When people, you know, when it was announced that MJF versus Hechicero was going to be the match, everybody shit all over it. And quite frankly, I did as well. Now, granted, we don't know if that was a match that MJF specifically asked for, but in terms of your audience, nearly everybody that I interfaced with leading up to the show thought that match was a bit of a letdown. And if you look at the next pay-per-view, they're already setting the stage for MJF versus Daniel Garcia at the biggest show of the year, which also feels like a bit of a letdown. No offense meant to Daniel Garcia.
Please, a lot of offense to Daniel Garcia.
Even if he's carrying that international title, that is not a match that I want to see at Wembley. Not whatsoever. So I think that, you know, Tony Khan, you book and you listen to the sickos. The sickos don't want MJF versus Daniel Garcia at the biggest show of the year. Please, trust me. This comes from somebody that's been to numerous events and orders every fucking pay-per-view since you're not doing the theater shit anymore. Thanks.
Yeah, well, there's another sign of the times right there.
Hot
topic. Oh, clearancing out shirts. Theaters can't go see the fucking events anymore. Yeah. But again, that's, you know, it's tough because at the same time, on Saturday night here in Vegas, literally walked into a lounge. We were waiting for a band to start. A band could not start until UFC was over. Just in a fucking, just a regular lounge. Not even a cover charge. Nothing. Because the casinos have to play those fucking UFC events until it is over. And then the band can start playing. That's how fucking popular that shit is.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that you lost a theater deal I just don't understand how that's possible.
I don't get it.
Because, right. Because there's never, even if your honest answer is, even if your audience is five people in that theater, the theater is making a percentage of money off of this. Yeah. So, you know, that, and that might be five people, you know, who are again buying popcorn or this or that from the concession stand. So it's really, it's a concession sell for, you know, again, people who might not be that. I'm also surprised. I know they have, I think we're going to possibly see it more with WWE now that they're with UFC, but I'm surprised that Tony didn't go after, you know, getting it out there into bars and restaurants and stuff like that. So that, you know, because you just don't see the same thing of, you know, even WWE is starting to pick up that traction again, where they're, you know, some places are showing the event.
Yeah, exactly. Where,
and if you're going to do a long, if you're going to do a show like you do UFC, where it's a fucking 6-7 hour show every time you put on a pay-per-view, then, you know, you show the places where there's fucking food and alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you know, there are legions of my Cinemarks that are suddenly without a place to watch it unless they want to spend, you know, the $50 to order the show. Now, mind you, they do have a distribution deal where they are showing it at Dave and Buster's, but in Las Vegas, of all places, there's like one Dave and Buster's, and it's all the way on the east side, and I'm not going to go over there and dodge bullets while I'm trying to watch my AEW.
No, there's not. So, what are you talking about? There's one here in Henderson now that just opened up by LVAC, by the Henderson Hospital.
Okay.
And then isn't there – there's a Dave and Buster's in Town Center, isn't there?
Nope.
They close it?
I believe so. Because I did do some searching, and yeah, there was only the one that I saw. So
yeah there's the one in Henderson here that's been open for a few months now. So
okay, I might have to obviously get that info from you then.
Yeah, I just gave it to you. It's down by Henderson Hospital. It's pretty fucking simple. It's off of Galleria.
Hey, thanks. Anyway, nonetheless.
I'm sure a couple of people will go to this one, this next one, since it's Wembley. And is that
not to mention it'll start at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So
yeah, I was going to say, what time is that starting?
Yeah. Well, for us, no, it obviously probably 2 PM Eastern. So 11 AM here,
right?
Get yourself some breakfast and watch some AEW for 6 hours.
Well, let's see if it starts at 11 a.m. Eastern, or our time, then figure 2 hour pre-show, so 9 a.m. It's gonna be like watching Sunday football.
Yeah.
All fucking day into Monday night football. Literally Monday night football. All right. So that's what it's looking like on AEW's end, WWE's end. The big SmackDown ending of Paul Heyman refusing to acknowledge Solo and doing something that, this is why storytelling matters.
Absolutely.
When's the last time you see Paul Heyman take a bump?
Dude, it's been a long ass time. Now, props to them for protecting him on that table bump, by the way.
Oh, fuck yeah.
That was the easiest that anybody's ever been laid down, with good reason. And I'm not saying, oh, well, they should have fucking thrown him through the table. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that just shows you the level of respect that they have for Paul Heyman, and with good reason. I thought that he deserves a fucking Academy Award, man. He deserves all of the hardware, no matter what kind of an award ceremony you give the guy. Heyman just continues to show that he and everything in the Heyman vortex is fucking amazing and just unbelievable, dude. Unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, and again, what you see is the benefit of, out of all those guys, Solo can talk, right?
Yeah. Who knew?
Right. So you take, you take the guy who can give you some kind of like presence. You put him with three fucking monsters.
Exactly.
And you can do stuff like say that, no, no, I told Jacob take the night off. I listened to you, wise man. And then he fucking comes out. And you could just see a mob movie playing out where Haman knows he's about to get shot in the back of the head.
Yep.
Instead of getting inducted into the fucking family.
Exactly.
So, you know, laid out perfectly. Amazing how everyone fucking hates Roman. Oh my God. Oh, we're so sick of Roman fucking Reigns. And then all that fucking crowd was doing was chanting for Roman. I mean, this is how fucking fickle wrestling fans are.
Of course. Of course. And that's among, that's among all companies, bro.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
That's,
no, no.
That's just how it is. That's your consumer. That's your consumer base.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And he'll come out and he'll get a huge pop. And then the next week, people are like, eh, I'm kind of sick of Roman Reigns. It's a pattern of wrestling.
I do have to say, too, though, of all venues for them to do that is MSG, you know? Yeah. So it just a perfect place, perfect venue, perfect into that, to that show, because you know what's going to happen, and that is your inciting incident. That is your inciting incident into the Bloodline Civil War.
Right.
That first shot was fired right then and there at the end of SmackDown.
Right. Which, again, you know, it's very interesting that the two major players in Paul Heyman and Sami Zayn, who were never, they're not Bloodline. But if you take those two away from the storytelling over the course of the couple of years, you lose, you know, 70, 80, 90% of what made everything special. And it shows a lot how even just tinkering it with just a little bit of flavor has really kept that thing going. The other thing that SmackDown brought was two NBA stars, and boy, ESPN put a fucking highlight on that, you know.
Full court press.
Yeah, there you go. But it, you know, again, it's one of those things where you put Logan Paul in that position, and then you have, you know, two NBA guys involved in an altercation. That's what it's all about. That's how you get more and more eyes on this, and it's casual, right? Because if you're an NBA fan and you just saw, well, wait, what happened? Oh, shit. Okay, exactly. Maybe we should check this out. Or
that is how you cross promote,
right?
Genuinely, because you're not relying on your network necessarily. You are seeking out other known IPs that you already have a good relationship with, and those people that represent those IPs. And this is why. And I know I get all the shit on this show for being the AEW guy, but this type of a situation is exactly why WWE is head and shoulders above any other professional wrestling company on the planet. As of right now, when we're doing this show, peeling back the curtain, July 1st, 2024, they are without question the worldwide leader, but things like that just show it. And it's a flex. Genuinely, it's a flex, but it's a flex that they can do. So why not fucking do it every chance you get?
Well, and something else that stood out to me. So that was Friday night, right? So when you're doing your highlights now for ESPN between the end of SmackDown and the beginning of UFC. You have all these UFC people who are going to be tuning in casually into ESPN getting ready for the fights. So now you run stuff about WWE. Why? Well, because UFC and WWE are the same fucking company.
Yeah.
So now this is how you get even more eyes on your shit, is because you're, you know, it's cross-pollination. And it just, you know, so Tony did the stupidest thing again this week by calling them the competition, which I was talking to DJ and I was like, DJ, it's like if you had a little bit of money and you made a few movies that were movies that went straight into streaming on Netflix or, you know, Amazon Prime or whatever, you know, the horses versus the gorillas zombie apocalypse, you know, shitty B movies that people are going to watch because they're on, you know, for a free, you know, you subscribe. So, oh, look, I like crappy horror. Here's something. All right.
Trauma.
And then you're like, yeah, man, our films are doing amazing. And, you know, it's our competition. It's guys like Warner Brothers and Universal and Fox that really have to worry because, you know, we're putting out great shit. And it's like, you know, it's like, you're not competing with them, dude.
Yeah.
You had money. You got a chance to put it on the service. People are watching it. That's great. But you're not competing with the big boys. It's a whole different fucking entity. Give up the idea that it's competition, because it stopped being competition in any sense when that deal was signed with, you know, making TKO.
Was it that point, or was it when Vince McMahon was finally exorcised, the demon of Vince McMahon finally being exorcised from the company?
Well, but think about it. If you didn't have now the structure that is in place, they have to answer to a corporation now.
Yep.
As compared to, let's say the sale didn't happen, but Vince was exercised out, right? Then you could still say that you're kind of on the same footing, because in theory, even though they're a bigger product, right, you know, or a more known product, have the years and stuff, the honest answer is they're still just a wrestling company, right? They're still just that, you know. It's bigger than that now. What you form now is fucking Walt Disney, right? It's a Disney Corporation type thing. Because Nick Khan is not fucking, he's not about, you know, well, who's going over in the main event and blah, blah. No, Nick Khan's about, okay, how can we get this person on this show, that person on this show, this person a movie, this person out here? How can we get fucking, they just, what was the fucking deal? They just got a fucking, a huge ass, wasn't it a deal with Manchester United or something? I thought they got some kind of English football sponsorship deal. Something like that, I think. Yeah, there's one team that I know they're not with, but they got something big.
Interesting, you know, how that works, huh?
But again, why is the guy who owns a fucking football team not having a fucking, why is this product not associated with that shit?
Why don't they do more with the NFL? Why don't they do more with the Champions League? Why don't they promote it each of these other fucking realms? It fucking drives me insane.
I mean, a neck brace at the NFL draft isn't
that enough. So here's the thing. I had no fucking problems with the neck brace. It was the Weinstein comment that soured everything. If he would have just been in the neck brace, because even people that don't normally give TK props, they were giving him props for being committed to that storyline. Right. But it was when he does this shit all the time. He's good up to a certain point, but then he steps over that line.
Yeah.
And that was where the problem lied. It is not with the neck brace, but with the over-the-top comments that were just unbelievably just baseless, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, and that's, again, that's, you know, again, that's like what he said about, you know, the competition and them getting the media rights deals that they got. What's good for us? And it's like,
it is though. It is, because it's still a professional wrestling product, and that's how they can sell that to WBD and or other outlets.
Right.
So the competition in the pro wrestling fandom and the pro wrestling world is a very good thing for absolutely everyone involved.
Right. Except for one fact, and that is when you have a loose cannon saying shit like that.
Bingo. If they would have somebody else involved, maybe somebody that has a little bit more of a filter or something of that nature, to actually speak on behalf of AEW in a more public setting. Who was that person for the first couple of years of AEW's existence? Oh, I don't know. Maybe he's the fucking champion on the other show. Cody Rhodes was your mouthpiece the first couple of years of AEW's existence. He did all the media. He did all of the PR work. He did everything. He was the face of AEW.
Realistically, the first year. Then Cokey McCoke got a little full of himself. No, it was
a couple of years.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
He definitely got full of himself for sure.
So Cody was doing the media phone calls for the first year.
Yep.
Then Tony decided, I'm going to take this over. And I think I'm almost positive, you start going back and you get the real true story of what happened. You know, there are four certain guys who are EVPs who very well, started this thing to get Cody out of there, because Cody was the fucking face. Those guys did not like the fact that Cody was getting all this shit. You know, when the network's like, hey, yeah, we want you on a game show. Hey, yeah, we want you to have a reality show. And those assholes aren't getting anything.
What about us?
Yeah. Well, they had a book, right? A kid's book, didn't they?
Incidentally, their book. Well, oh yeah, I.
It wasn't in Cracker Barrel released too.
I just found it funny that the name of the Young Bucks' actual full length book was "Killing the Business."
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to say another word. I'm just going to leave that out there.
Yeah. I have a friend who constantly points out, because he just fucking hates them. If you watch the ratings when they come out every fucking week, it seems to be that their segments are with, that's when they fucking lose people. And it's like, it's got to tell you something. Even with a character change, they're still not liked. So, you know, good for them though. They got their sneakers, which would have cost me $300, I think, at the signed pair of the sneakers at the pay-per-view. They only had a few pairs at the table, and I just, like, I was walking by, and some dude was looking at them, and it's like, first, they're just, like, gold fucking Nikes, or whatever. They look so gaudy and awful, and, like, I don't know, man. Would I pay that money just to fucking display those?
The thing is, somebody would. And clearly somebody did.
Well, that's right. Because I forgot I saw him at your place.
Shit. No thanks. I already have some signed shit, but I wouldn't spend $300 for a pair of shoes that were autographed.
Yeah, on the shoes, the limited edition Young Bucks shoes. Finally, you know,
let's get sick.
All right. What are we getting sick about?
Let's talk about the, you know, the shit that's going on over on the other WWE show.
NXT? Well, NXT has been spectacular. Oh, the other WWE show? Yeah, man. I can't believe Charlie Dempsey won his match. And, dude.
And then he stepped through the prohibited portal, yeah. Man.
Prohibited portal's getting big, man. So here again, here's something that they're. So you go to TNA, and now they've had consecutive weeks where their women have gone over there and lost to Jordynne Grace. You are allowing your fucking talent to go lose on their show. I remember someone had a deal with them. I just don't remember how many times their talent were allowed to go over to their show and lose to their talent. And I think we complained about that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Even I complained about that shit.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Oh, now, man.
Mind you, there is a qualifier to this. Everything is happening with their developmental brand, because obviously there are people that are going to be hearing my voice, hearing your voice, they're going to qualify it and they're going to say, oh, well, it was only NXT. Realistically speaking, we have to make the distinction. Is NXT a developmental brand or is it a third brand? At this point, quite frankly, with all of the attention and everything that they are getting and the move to the CW, I don't believe that they're a developmental brand anymore. And they haven't been for some time. That move to CW is just solidifying.
Yeah, and it also... you can't tell me it's a developing brand when you have Gallows and Anderson on it, when you have, you know, talent that is legitimately there because they're there to, you know, to boost up the brand a little bit. You also have a lot more jumping going on between the brands, right? So you know, you see people who are getting kind of tested by going up to SmackDown or Raw. And then you're seeing it. And that's the other thing, too. It's like, yeah, you can kind of call it development, but in the sense that you're the people who are really getting, quote unquote, developed are the ones who are ending up being Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes, who are just
they're investing in.
Oh yeah, and just you're just fucking seeing them paying off. But
absolutely.
Look up and down too. And what's interesting about it, and this is again, this is the whole idea of you want to call it development. Well, really, the development is the performance center. That's your development. This is your TV show that is essentially something that you're using so that these people can just get weekly TV in, right? But you can still have your stories, you can still have how things are done so that when you're going to Raw or SmackDown, you know how to do it, right? The benefit of these guys going over to TNA, right, is bringing the attention to TNA. TNA now has a deal with Endeavor. So, again, there's things going on that is beyond just, well, yeah, it's their, you know, their blah, 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 you know, shitty fucking product going up. Listen, don't put it past them. If they really want to stick it to someone, they will fucking send one of their main roster guys over to TNA, especially because I think right now on Slammiversary, which is at the end of July, Moose is going against, it's like a six-way match for the title, and right now there's two spots still unannounced. You can't
give me AJ Styles in one of those spots.
That's what I'm saying. You can't tell me that a guy like AJ or fuck R-Truth. There's another guy who has
history. Yeah.
Any one of those mainstays who have had time over there. LA Knight, anyone?
Yeah.
Remember Eli Drake?
Anyone? Eli Drake, yeah.
So
fuck it. Let's go here. Drew.
Yeah.
You could throw Jesus. Drew McIntyre.
Jesus Christ. Here's the perfect. You have, oh my God. You have Drew and
Punk.
No, wait. You have TNA. You know,
there's another one too, by the way.
Right, of course. But you have TNA, they have their briefcases where they have the four different briefcases. The guy gets fired, a guy gets a championship.
Feast or fired.
Yeah, feast or fired, right? So you have that happen like right before a pay-per-view. Guy wins it. He's gonna, he has the feast for the heavyweight title. Then Moose defends the title going in against Drew McIntyre. Drew wins the title, and then you have them cash the feast case in, and Drew loses the fucking TNA championship 1-2-3 within 2 minutes.
and again, you could have Punk show up there and fuck him over there and play off of Punk's history there as well. Honestly, when we started this podcast, when I first got onto this show, you can go back. The thing that I mentioned that I love the most is when professional wrestling companies worked together. Sure. And if I would all of a sudden sit here and say, oh, well, I think it's bullshit. WWE is just trying to take out AEW because they're aligning with TNA. I would look like a giant fucking hypocrite for saying that. I'm not going to say anything even close to that. I love the fact that WWE has embraced this change and they understand that, yes, they are the big kid in the sandbox, but they can play nice with the other littler kids in the sandbox. Just not that one kid that tried to throw shit at them previously.
Yeah, and if that kid ever got shit out of his brains, then maybe things would go better. But the truth is that when you see an advertisement now come out for Josh Barnett's fucking Bloodsport with the Creed brothers,
that's awesome. Yeah. That's a fucking fit. Like, that is a perfect fit. Absolutely, they should be involved with that show.
Yeah.
And why not throw, if you're TKO, why not throw a few bucks to Josh Barnett and make that show even better because of production or whatever they can do?
Right.
Because that checkbook's limitless. So, yeah, why not just bring everything in? When the tide comes in, all boats rise. We all know that. Right. Why not see that in action?
And working more with GCW, that's another way to get guys into NXT.
Exactly.
Finally, we will, since Parker just joined us here and said, do you like Bray? Of course, we love Bray Wyatt.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And as of right now, definitely enjoying what's coming with the Bray Wyatt Six. Raw tonight, they had a video package that played, and the continuation, essentially a new video, but the same idea. And now we're seeing a lot more of the idea of Bo and Uncle Howdy are the same person, however that is, going to play out. But the man, the whoever is fucking directing it and doing this, goddamn,
phenomenal shit.
It's unbelievable. And it went farther on this one, where the technical stuff they did was even more supernatural type stuff, and you know, a fade out here, you know, him showing up here, him showing up, just so hard to describe even when talking about it.
Expert cinematography.
Yeah. Yeah. And perfect storytelling. Because we now know that, you know, the reason this family is together, they are family now. It's said they are family, and it's because they were all outcast. And it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of the reason that those people are together is because there was nothing really for them to do. You know?
Yeah. Without a doubt. I think that the execution has been phenomenal so far. And ultimately, we do have to temper expectations, because that bell's got to ring at some point.
Right.
So we'll see how things go in the future, but I'm very, very optimistic based on what I've seen. I haven't seen the stuff from tonight, but you know, the stuff last week, and the stuff that they did the week before that. I love it. Absolutely loved the Bray Wyatt characters. Bray had a very, very special and unique vision for everything he was involved with. That was something that was plain to see. And now for his brother to be able to pick up that mantle and to be able to lead this and truly bring some of the things that we all know that they discussed and plotted and planned, that were just not implemented, for him to be able to bring these things to life, I guarantee that Wyndham is looking down and smiling. It's phenomenal what's happened so far. I just hope that it continues, and hopefully we don't see a drop off once that bell rings.
Yeah. And again, I think I'm, well, we have to also look at some of the talent involved, right?
Absolutely.
Which is kind of like, that's the upside of this, right?
Yes.
You don't, I mean, Joe Gacy was, he's not a bullshit wrestler. He's good.
Yeah.
He's good. Sam is fucking, you know, Dexter Lumis, Sam is fucking good. Nikki Cross is fucking good. You know,
she's yeah. awesome. She's yeah. vastly underutilized in her WWE career. Right. So I think that we all know how people kind of fall into that one gimmick, and you know, they make it their own, and they become synonymous with that particular gimmick. I think we're about to see Nikki Cross in her personification, and really just the next step for her in WWE.
I think all of them essentially are going to get that essentially. You know, and there will be a couple that will be able to break off from it at some point, of course. Yeah. But what's fascinating is what Bo has done is embraced his brother's persona, essentially.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing in the way he talks and whatnot, it's just phenomenal, because the one thing that you lose sight of is that Bray overshadowed Bo, right?
Yes.
And it's because he got a good gimmick versus Bo getting a shitty gimmick. He had to, you know, make something of an NXT.
But he sure as shit did, man.
He did.
He took chicken shit and turned that into chicken salad like no one.
Yeah.
That fucking Bo Leave gimmick should have had him just dead to rights, but it developed a following because people saw just how good he was and
right.
And I think that he's going to do the exact same thing here, not just because of, you know, having the connection and attachment to Bray and what he did, I genuinely think that we're going to see the talents of Bo Dallas, of, you know, Uncle Howdy, whatever kind of a gimmick name that you want to put behind him. But Taylor Rotunda, I think we are going to see him take the next step as well.
Yeah, and I think what you're also going to see is potentially someone who, you know, given the circumstances, is now being given an option in which, quite frankly, this is how you can become a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
His dad's a Hall of Famer. His brother is soon to be a Hall of Famer. He can be. There is no doubt. Just bring back the Vince puppet. That's all we need.
That's such good shit.
Someone just Vince puppet in a prison suit getting
you got to have the pen. You got to draw the pencil mustache on.
Right. Yeah. No. It's crazy how this is again playing out. The crowd broke into holy shit just for when the lights hit and the stuff was up, and then they just silhouetted, I think, the three guys, while Chad Gable was literally just kind of going around the ring to like get himself out. He had to go out through the fucking audience.
Yeah.
Which is another thing they did tonight, which was they started the show with Jay coming down through the audience, then Gable confronting Jay, and then Gable leaving through the audience. So they're doing more of this, you know, again, you know, off the fly. once again, Kevin Dunn's gone. It's like, yeah, now they can actually do shit because
yeah.
You don't have to be stuck to the same bullshit that has been going on. And even if the guy who just got released going, you know, if he goes to AEW, whoever the producer was with them.
Oh
yeah. I forget who it was, but he just got,
yeah.
He just got,
I forget his name, but yeah.
Yeah. Even if he went over to AEW, it's like, what is that person actually going to bring? Because that's the question. Are they going to bring fresh ideas, or are they going to bring shit they were doing under Kevin Dunn that they learned that way? Find the new fucking eyes.
You have to. You have to. And it's ultimately, a show cannot be formulaic and be successful. You can follow a blueprint, but when it becomes noticeable that, hey, every show is going to start with a 15-minute promo, followed by this, followed by that, people are already conditioned to know what they can tune out from and or stop watching or watch later. And yep. that is a habit that you have to break. Just like how AEW, they're, for so long, they've relied on just putting on banger matches with no common thread of storyline. To keep people coming back and tuning in. So Obviously now you've whittled your base down to 500,000 people, and you've got to start the rebound. Like, you have to do things to change what's been happening. Because I think that in both sides, you know, WWE and AEW, they are noticing what is working, what's not working. The only thing that you're seeing is WWE has actually, for being a larger company and a larger business, they are being more agile with knowing what they need to change and what speed they need to change those things at in order to survive and to get better. You're actually seeing AEW not being as agile as this major corporation to make changes that they need to make. And it's mind blowing.
And the reason being is it's just simple. It's the same reason that WWE didn't do it when Vince ran it. It's because it was Vince's company.
Right.
And Tony's doing the same fucking thing. And the problem with that is that we're seeing every single person who has a job right now in the WWE, from top to fucking bottom, they're being looked at by the bosses of the company, not the internal company, right? You're looking at Endeavor looking at all these fuckers. You're looking at TKO looking at all these fuckers. So you're seeing something that's a little bit different, and that is, if Hunter is not performing, Hunter's gone. He's fucking replaceable.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Sean's replaceable. And that's just your creative shit. You know, Bruce Pritchard is fucking now replaceable.
But dude, that's the reality of business, and that's how it should be.
Exactly. And that's the difference. And it's funny that Tony liked to take shots at Vince when all Tony is doing is using Vince's playbook.
Yeah.
Like he's not even allowing what Vince allowed, and that is your Bruce Pritchards, your, you know, those confidants who you could actually hand things over to. And, you know, if Vince would knock some stuff out, he would, but for the most part, he'll, you know, just trust them to do stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like Tony just wants that feel that everything is successful because of him, and he's so fucking good, and he's so great. And I'm going to come out 3 times during a taping, and I'm just going to say how fucking amazing this company is and how fucking amazing I am. And it's so great to see you all here. Where are you guys going? No, wait, there's another show starting. It's Ring of Honor. Where are you guys going? You know, it's just the guy is lost. And again, you don't want the company to not succeed.
Right.
I want the company to succeed. I want him to fucking fail miserable. I want that dude to fucking lose money. I want his daddy to bend him over and spank his ass. Oh, yeah.
All right, then.
Hey, new reality show.
Don't need to know about your kinks, man.
New reality show, man. Billionaire Daddy Island. All right. It's going to be billionaire daddies and their fucking sons and daughters. It's going to be like MILF Island, but with billionaire daddies. And it's just going
to
be.
I tried to scrub that show from my fucking memory.
It's around, and it's even worse. Because right now they got not only the young kids, but their dads. The MILFs are macking both the kid and the dad. God. Yep. Gotta love the society we live in. It's so fucked up.
Hooray, America.
Yeah, on that note, Steve, why don't you tell us about the America we love?
All right, guys. Hey, thank you for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for liking, sharing, subscribing, doing all the stuff that you guys do. We appreciate each and every one of you. Also, very special thank you to all the brave men and women serving this country, whether you do it on lands foreign or domestic. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do what we love to do. And last but not least, repsports.com, repsports.com. Go there for all your pre-workout, weight loss, general energy needs. Repsports.com. Use promo code Vegas at checkout. Save yourself 15%. And Tony Khan, please sign Stephanie Vaquer. Thank you.
Yeah, that would be a good signing. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see what happens. Or he'll sign, you know, just wait until the next big WWE release and then just put, you know, 3-year contract with everything the person wants. And Ginger's coming when?
I think he'll show up in about 3 weeks, probably.
At Wembley?
Of course. Yeah, that have him debut at Wembley. Fuck it. Why not?
Have him
be the one to cost Swerve the title. Fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then
you can't hinder the gender.
No. And they'll just refer to him as an ex-champion in the other company. If Ginger, you know, no one's ever done it, but has any ex-champion, I think they should like show up with a replica belt.
Like the fucking $20 belt that you get at Walmart.
Like, not even like the $350 one that fans get.
The toy
$20 one. Yeah.
There you go. I'd be fucking down. Why not at this point, man? But in all seriousness, it wouldn't surprise me if they passed on Stephanie Vaquer. She signs with WWE and then AEW signs Natty. Book it. It's going to happen.
You know, Serena Deeb comes out, wrestles a match, bitches about, I didn't win, but I'm not just going to jump. I'm anybody, blah, blah, blah. And then Rio comes out and it's like, oh, Serena Deeb and Rio.
That's a wet fart. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like, and we're not even going to wrestle. We're just going to get in the ring and just have a quick little stare down before I get out of the ring. Even though I'm the one who called someone out, I'm backing out. What?
Yeah. At least we are going to be getting Mercedes and Britt Baker at Wembley, I guess. That's positive.
Yay.
Which one's going to win that political battle?
Well, that's a great question. I think that's huge. The other thing about that, really, quite honestly, is Britt Baker is a fucking shitty wrestler, to be honest. And Mercedes isn't that great. She's good, but she isn't that great. So basically the thing is if Mercedes could like break Britt's nose, it's going to be think about it though. The matches that Britt Baker have that fans thought were fucking phenomenal, this chick is amazing, were matches in which she had something fucking broken
that's or it. bleeding.
Yeah. So it's like, that's the problem with her is that she's a hot chick who can talk, who has a lot of manipulation power within certain circles, and she fucking got lucky that opponents who could wrestle fucked her up on accident to the point where she became famous. And it's like, let's put it this way. Your big winner last year at Wembley was Soraya. The fuck is that woman done in that fucking company? I mean, Toni Storm is outshining her.
Toni Storm is the best thing that they got going right now in AEW.
Absolutely. No doubt. And I think Toni Storm would have been great in the WWE had she gotten the right opportunities. She did not. The thing is what I'm saying is Toni Storm is outshining her at probably 2/3 of the salary, 1/3 of the salary even. Soraya is getting paid a shitload of money to basically be nothing in that company, and as opposed to someone who literally you should back up the fucking truck and be like, stay here, because if you go over there, then here's the money that you would make right now up front over there. We'll give you that now just to stay. Because it's the same with Swerve. Yeah. If you really are serious about, you got to keep these people, and that's the biggest thing. And again, people like Soraya and fucking Edge, just these people that were, big names, blah blah. It's just like they haven't moved your needle. The people who can move your needle are the ones that actually have characters and development people care about. And it's because they're fresh. They're new things that haven't been seen before. So do that. And please have Prince Nana turn on fucking Swerve soon. Get rid of him. It's like, that weigh-in thing was such a fucking crock of shit. Why? Because the UFC is running that night. Okay.
Whatever. Exactly. Exactly. Let's go move some needles.
Yeah. Speaking of moving needles. All right, everybody. We'll actually see you next Monday. And that should be our last Monday for a while because DJ Impact will finally be back. We hope.
Or so we hope.
Yeah. With some new fuzzy Canadian slippers. And apparently he will sing O Canada before every show. He was indoctrinated. That's good. What they do when they put you in Canadian prison. He also now will dress like a Mountie.
So, hey, I wonder if we can get Bossolari to dress up like fucking Trudeau.
So he'll say something like, "Well, I have the wig." Well, I have the wig.
Right.
And maybe I'll call PCO and have PCO come on, and then we could have Trudeau and PCO have a debate, political debate.
Yes.
I think that would be fun. Actually, absolutely. Now I'm stupid enough to think about actually doing that.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Hey, Rob. Content. Rob, start working on your Justin Trudeau.
If you can't get that accent down, just get the accent from his dad, Fidel. Everything will be fine.
Yeah, yeah. Or just do Obama and just put on Trudeau clothes and you're fine.
Right.
Or when in doubt, we know Rob just starts talking like Trump because he can't do anything else funny. So...
I mean, the opinions expressed, yada, yada, yada.
Hey, Rob.
Keep in mind, he's the head writer of the show.
All right. I can't believe he wants us to say this shit about him. He'll also be playing at Wacko's Yak House on Main Street and 5th on September 29th. So catch that whenever you can. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week.